Hare Krishna. We've heard that once they asked Srila Saraswati Thakur about why the sadhus or the Vaishnavas are using the technology of the day, and that his response was that actually only they should be allowed to use it. They have the only legitimate use for these things. Not, they think, oh, we'll use them for our mundane things, but you shouldn't be using these things. He's saying, no, they should only be used. This is the only legitimate use for them, is the promotion of Krishna consciousness. So Pujala Ragapata Gaurava Bhange Matala Sarujana Bishaya Range, originally, that way, Vishaya. That things which appear to be mundane will be used in service to the Ragamarg, to promote Ragamarg, which is ultimately what Krishna consciousness is about, spontaneous devotion. Any questions? Yes.
I heard in one of the lectures that the soul has its senses, its own senses.
Yes.
And the question is, are they somehow appear in the outer world, or they are just used in the spiritual world, and soul is not interested to use them in the material world? And how does the inner Svarup or reveals itself if it reveals
out or just yes, well, it gets at the heart of the matter. It's mentioned in the 10th canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam, the longest chapter. It's called Veda Stuti, the prayers of the personified Vedas. Right? This chapter is extraordinarily long and extraordinarily philosophical. Different personified Vedas, Upanishads, are speaking and representing their conclusions, which we like to say as a sidebar that Srila Guru Maharaj, and this will be in line with what you're saying, and we hear in Bhagavad Gita to approach the guru and guru domain, tadvati pranipatena pariprajnena sevaya upadekshanti te jnanam jnaninas tattva darshina. So first, pranipatena, bowing down, offering the highest aspect of ourselves to the least aspect of that plane, and more than a symbolic, but a substantial gesture that finished with this world of experience, the egocentric world. Right. Prajna, inquiring out of service necessity, not inquiring to acquire something to increase the circumference of exploitation, but withdrawing from the plane of exploitation, withdrawing from envisioning ourselves voyeuristically as exploiting units, but offering ourselves in service to the higher plane, withdrawing from trying to exploit that which is lower than us to serve and dedicate ourselves to that which is higher. Upadekshanti te jnanam. Jnaninas tattva darshina, that agent, tattva darshi, has seen, is seeing, experiencing the truth. So Srila Guru Maharaj says here, it says darshi, like we hear the word darshan, means to see, It also means view or viewpoint. Darshan is also synonymous with philosophy, of a way of seeing things. As Srila Gurumaya says, Gaudiya Darshan means Mahaprabhu's way of seeing things. Mahaprabhu and his followers, their way of seeing things. So, Darshi, says it comes from Drishi, like we have the word Rishi. People have heard of Maharishi, Rishi. So again, Rishis are seeing, experiencing, sharing their observations, not Sarshti, Srishti, which means to create as a mundane author creates a story, something that is the product of the imagination, the mundane world. They are observing. So Guru Maharaj says this points to what is being observed in this context is eternal. They're not creating something within the confines of time and space, but they're seeing, observing what is eternal, right? And that's being, through their agency, brought into this world and accessible by connecting with them through service and association. So in the beginning of this chapter, Parikshit Maharaj is asking Sukadev Goswami that if the senses are mundane, then the tongue is made out of flesh, you have a voice box, the ear, the eye, all these things made out of flesh, that then how can they vibrate spiritual sound? I mean, personified Vedas means they're, in one sense, shabda, shruti, personified sounds. And so this question comes at the beginning. How can there be spiritual sound if it's the fleshy tongue that vibrates and the fleshy ear that's hearing? Like we hear biologically, they said, well, there are millions of little tiny hairs in the ear, and then they vibrate, and there's some liquid in the cochlea, and this way, some, we've all heard some description like that. And there's always something similar for the eye. Everything's reversed and then upside down and then it comes in and it's... Right. Every sense, there's something like that. Right. So the question is a very good question. See, factoring all of this in, then what do we mean when we talk about spiritual sound? Or by extension, nama, rupa, guna, lila. Nam, sound. Rupa, the form, guna, qualities, lila, pastimes. And Rupa Goswami says, Atak Shri Krishna Namadi Nabhavyed Grahyam Indriye. That the name, form, qualities, and pastimes of Krishna are beyond sense experience. But we should be cautious not to make erroneous conclusions on the basis of that. There's places in the Upanishads Veda where they say, Apani Pado Javana Grihita. He has no legs, he has no eyes, he has no ears. So they think the erroneous conclusion, he's formless, nirakar. And form, senses, sound, all of these things are something within this world. But that divine substance is beyond all of this. So we conclude, impersonal, formless. But the second half says, although he has no eyes, ears, legs, etc., he can see, hear, touch, touch, taste, smell, and feel. So the Vaishnava Acharyas are saying that what this points to is when it says he has no eyes, it means he has no fleshy eye, but can see. That means spiritual eyes, spiritual ears, spiritual senses. So Rupa Goswami is saying, Atak Sri Krishna Namadi Nabhavyed Grahamindye means this divine sound, divine form, divine qualities, divine pastimes and movement is beyond what can be perceived by the mundane eye, ear, eye, mind, etc. But Sevan Mukhe Hijavaru Shayameva Spurtyada. But the same tongue, when electrified with seva, current, the current of seva, brings illumination. Just like we have all this equipment assembled here. Without the electric current, the apparatus is a shadow of itself, really. If we factor in, Guru Maharaj is saying, that reality is a thing plus its potential. The potential of all these electronic devices is only realized when they're infused with an electric current. Then they can see, record, do all of these things. So what is most significant is that current, which by parallel in this example is seva. Right? The current is seva. When the senses are infused with serving tendency as opposed to exploiting tendency, then they're in their natural, original function. Even within this world, we know that while sleeping, we have dreams where we see things. There's a type of seeing in the dream world. We feel things, we taste things, we hear things. All types of sensual activities take place in the dream world. Right? So it means that it's not limited to in the external objective world. Also, when we find in Gita, Indriyani Paranyahur Indriyebhya Paramanaha Manasastu Parabhute Yobhute Paratastu Saha. Krishna showing us incrementally, step by step, how to walk into the spiritual domain and the spiritual conception of self, saying superior to the senses, superior to the objects of the senses, things which are seen, heard, tasted, touched, smelt, felt, are the senses themselves. Superior to the senses is the mind. Right? So, and we have this experience too, if you're absent-minded, right, and this is a common expression in English, someone say, oh, what happened? You go, oh, I didn't notice it. Right? I didn't observe. I didn't hear that. Did you say something? Yes. I've been talking to you. I'm telling you. Oh, I'm sorry. I was absent-minded. I didn't see that. I didn't hear that. I didn't feel that. There's many versions of being absent-minded. So what we can understand from that is the mind is really the seat of all these sensual activities. It's the seat of hearing, of seeing, tasting, smelling, feeling, etc. The rest is an apparatus. As I've mentioned, the body is the biological expression of the soul's delusion. That's the bad news. The good news is that it is a hint, more than a hint, an indication that the soul has, in its innate position, full sensuous capacity. The soul can hear, taste, smell, feel, etc. This is the good news. Right? All of these things are native to the soul and the soul world. Right? It's the soul's presence within the body that's enabling sense experience. Right? So, Srila Guru Maharaj has introduced his conception known as the subjective evolution of consciousness. And part of it is understanding something he calls chayabhas or chidabhas. And it is like this. Chit means consciousness. So we have what's called the chit jagat. That's in the spiritual world can be described in different ways. Jagat means world. So the chit jagat means the conscious world, the world of consciousness. Then there's the achit jagat, means the unconscious world, the objective world. Srila Guru has given an excellent example by saying, the whole objective world is like an iceberg floating in an ocean of consciousness. Thus, we have to grasp this idea. The whole objective world is like an iceberg floating in an ocean of consciousness. Right? We know also from Jiva Dharma, Bhaktivinoda Thakur reminding us that ice is not the natural condition of water. So when it's in that unnatural state, you can say it's hard, it's this. You can determine, observe so many attributes. But when it resumes its natural and normal state, it will be different. So things like this, you know, this is hard. It's, you know, coated in lacquer. It has depth, height, width, right? Color, weight. Those are all concepts. Height, weight, length, breadth, dimensions, depth, color, these are all concepts. So Srila Guru Maharaj is telling us that an object is a cluster of subjective concepts. That's what an object is. It's a cluster of subjective concepts. Right? And so that's what one object is. That's what the whole objective world is. So it's like an iceberg floating in an ocean of consciousness. He'll make reference to Berkeley, Bishop Berkeley, and his theory, which is represented in the slogan that the world is in the mind. Right? Now, this is easily parodied. People will say, oh, you mean like all of this, it's just in my mind, right? That's not what he's saying. And as Woody Allen once joked, he said, if, you know, the world is in the mind, then that car I bought last week was really overpriced, right? But that's not what he means when he says the world is in the mind. He means to say this whole objective world, all of these objects are floating in an ocean of consciousness. Consciousness is the basis. The subjective reality is the basis of the objective world. That's what he means to say. Not that it doesn't exist, but he's tracing the source of its existence to consciousness. Consciousness being the primordial substance. So, Srila Guru Maharaj will say, how is it that The soul is chit by nature too, conscious. How can you go from the chit jagat, the spiritual world, and start experiencing the objective world? It can't, it's not just suddenly that that will, that capability, capacity is there. So he introduced this concept, chitabhas or chayabhas, saying the mind, in the ego, intelligence, mind, and senses are a shadow self of the original self. That's what it is. Chaya means shadow. Chayabhas. Chitabhas also means, abhas means a semblance of something. So he's saying in this, just like a glove, you could say, the glove, you put a glove on your hand and you can handle certain things. Like I remember seeing years ago when we were children, there when they were showing like nuclear, I'm going to say the wrong thing now, you know, isotopes. If Ashutosh was here, he could say exactly what it is. But, you know, when radioactive material, that's what I mean to say. And so they would show someone with robotic arms. So you see the man, he's controlling something, and then these robotic arms, they go in, and then he picks up and he's pouring that. Make sure you don't spill it. You know, right? The atom is our friend. They used to have propaganda films like that when they were introducing nuclear energy. The atom is our friend. You know? It's what in the Bhagavad Gita is called Ugra Karma, that the demonic introduce things into the world in the name of making the world better that are actually will destroy the world as we know it. And you can all think of your own examples. So that robotic arm, now we have, you know, a little more sophisticated, so-called virtual reality. There's some similarities there. Virtual as opposed to substantial. So Srila Guru Maharaj said, this shadow-like self, the shadow of the conscious self enveloping the jiva soul allows it to navigate the objective world. So we're seeing through these eyes, hearing, tasting, touching, smelling, feeling. So as I said, the good news is this is indicative of the soul's innate position. Like even in genetic engineering, we find that when they want to duplicate someone or something, like, remember Dali, the sheep?
Yeah.
Gurudev said something like, when they all become Dali, the world's finished. So there was the first sheep, genetically cloned sheep, and they called her Dali. But still, how do they do that? This is what the point I mean to make. They get some genetic material, right? It's not like the old Frankenstein of Mary Shelley, where there, what was the idea? You know, the Dr. Frankenstein, he was collecting parts from cadavers and sewing them together. And, you know, took the brain, they had the brain, like there was a brain of a really nice gentleman, and then the brain of a criminal, and Igor broke the brain of the gentleman, so, you know, they had to put some brain in there, and they put in the brain of the criminal. So they're assembling all these parts, and then lightning comes down. Right? You know, it's alive! And then Frankenstein, not like that. That's a little crude. Mary Shelley, I mean, she knew what she was doing, too. She was with a group of writers, like her husband and some others, and they were in a castle somewhere. And they said, let's think of scary stories. And he said, I got one. But genetic material means something very minute. This is the point I mean to make. DNA on a very, minuscule, on that plane, that's where the full identity is located. That's what I'm trying to say. That's what we learn from this, is that identity, and I'm making a parallel here, that identity is located in an even subtler plane than that. Right? But within that plane, there's the full spectral range of sensual expression. Seeing, hearing, tasting, touching, smelling, feeling. Right? So, if this body is the biological expression of the soul's delusion, and it's taking shape and myriad, millions of forms, Jalaja, Navalakani, Stavralaka, Vingshati, Krimaya, Rudra, Sankhyaka, Padma Purana. Just as you combine RGB or red, yellow, blue, 3 makes 9 makes 81, 8.18 million, 400,000, millions of varieties, of variations of life forms based upon tama, raja, sattva, ignorance, passion, goodness. Millions of variations of that generate these varieties of life forms. So as the body is based upon exploiting tendencies, when we withdraw from the plane of exploitation and become activated with the dedicating tendency under the guidance of Saru Shastra Guru Vaishnav, then the swaroop that you mentioned, it's under construction. It's based upon dedicating tendencies. So as you can have a body here based upon the tendency to exploit, the spiritual form is based upon the tendency to serve and dedicate. And so it parallels objective evolution, but herein it is subjective evolution. So, and as we heard, Raghunath Das Goswami, revering even the lower species, the creamy, the key insects of the Dham, saying, Yat kinchit trigu maki kata mukham goste shamashtam hitat sarvananda mukunda doitam lilanukulam param. Said, mukunda doita, they're dear to Krishna because they're lilanukul, they're favorable to the pastimes. So as we told, you don't find yogis in Vrindavan, but you do find bumblebees, birds, different types of beings like that who are absorbed in that chit jagat, in that chinmoy dham, vaikuntheya prithivyadi sakala chinmoy, where everything's constructed out of consciousness. But not just generic abstract consciousness, but consciousness enriched with dedicating tendency, not consciousness polluted by exploiting tendencies. Right? Serving in heaven, not reigning in hell. Right? So the chinmoy jagat, all the forms there made out of consciousness, and their forms, expressions of particular types of dedicating tendency from the, we see in the Goloka Mahatmyam section of the Brihad Bhagavatamritam, the whole structures from Sanatana Goswami to Sambandha Gyana Charja, finally praising to the extreme Goloka Vrindavan, the last 70, 80 verses of the book, begins with glorifying the soil of Vrindavan, and then the leaves and the grass and the creeper and the flowers and the trees, and then the bumblebees and the birds and the peacocks, the clouds. The clouds are conscious. Sometimes the clouds, they're also stunned in ecstasy, but wanting to serve, so suppressing their ecstatic tendencies. Observing the pastimes of Krishna and the cowherd boys, the clouds make umbrellas for them to shield them from the sun and start raining little, like, flowers. Raindrop flowers, flower raindrops. They're also participating. Everything in the spiritual world is conscious. The directions are conscious. So the Goloka Mahatmya, glorifying everything, the rivers, it's a gradation. The rivers are spiritually conscious. The Jamuna, she can appear as a river or as a person. Sometimes we see children, they go to school and they have a play for the children. Right? And the child may come home and the mother will say, "Oh, what part do you play?" And a little child will say very happily, "I'm a flower." "Oh, must be a very beautiful flower." "Yes. I'm a flower." They have a part to play. To be a flower in the spiritual world is a wonderful, is a, you know, 10 million times more wonderful than that. Right? So we have to reconceive the possibilities, reconceive the potential. Angani yasya sakalendriya vyuttimanti pashanti panti kalayanti jaram jaganti ananda chinmaya sadu jvala vigrahasya govinda mari purusham tamaham bhajami. As Krishna's senses are interchangeable, so are his devotees' senses interchangeable. They can taste by seeing. Sometimes when they're seeing Krishna's so beautiful, they're drinking Krishna's beauty with their eyes. So not only is there sensual capability, but they're all interchangeable. The eyes are not limited to seeing. The ears are not limited to hearing. So to answer that question, look, it's the largest chapter in the 10th canto, so you can understand the answer is quite involved. But in a nutshell, according to Srila Guru Maharaj, the answer is that, yes, matter, and it's very consistent with what he says all along, yes, matter cannot generate spirit. So the tongue, like namakar bahirai bata namakabunoi, the tongue can't vibrate Krishna nam. Right? Like going from down to up. It cannot produce Krishna nam, we'll say. Atakshi Krishna nam adi nabhavye, beyond the capacity of the senses. But if Krishna chooses to descend, then even the mundane can be infused with spiritual substance. Not the inverse. The mundane cannot generate the spiritual, but the spiritual can use the mundane for expression. So when the heart is under the influence of Krishna Nam, then the tongue can vibrate Krishna Nam. So as we said initially, Saraswati Thakur's motto, Pujala Ragapat Gaurava Bhange, Matala Sarujana Bishaya Range, saying, Raga Marg, that divine abode, plane that we just discussed, that's far above. To try and bring that down here, it'll become adulterated, polluted, degraded. it will no longer maintain its integrity. But here we can take the things of this world, as we told initially, the cameras, the lights, the internet, all of these things, and they can be infused with a serving tendency. That's possible. And we've heard the story that with regard to rasa, that divine nectarine liquid substance, nigama kalpatror galitam palam shukamukaram ritudravasham yatam pibata bhagavatam rasamalayam muhuraho rasika bhuvibhavuka. The Prayojan Tattva sloka of the beginning of the Bhagavatam, saying it's all directed toward this divine substance, Radha Rasa Shuddha Nidhi. Anyway, the India, the land of the mango. Here we have some very nice mangoes, but one or two. In India, there are maybe 100 or more. I forget how many, but there are a lot. So in the olden times, the minister, the kings from the Middle East, I guess you would say, would send a minister to India as it was coming under Muslim rule. And when the minister would come back, or their ambassador, be telling them the wonderful things that are available in India, like the mango. And so the king's always hearing about this mangoes, and the man said, they're so, you won't believe how wonderful this nectarine taste of this fruit is, just, it's inconceivable, it's beyond. And he's saying, why don't you bring me some? He said, well, I try to bring them, but by the time it takes so long, the journey, they're rotten halfway. And the king's still eager. So first thing we learn, you try and bring that, and we say, bring what, isn't that higher world down here? It gets rotten before it reaches. It can only descend out of its own necessity, not out of our curiosity or our force, by force to bring it down. So anyway, the ambassador's saying, trying to remedy the situation, he thought, all right, I think I can give you the mango experience. So he took some tamarind and some turmeric and some sweet water and juice, and he made a concoction. And then he had his beard, and then he put that in his beard, because some mangoes have beards. Put that in there. And then he told the king, he goes, suck my beard. So then the king's going, and he's saying, now you know what is mango. So for those people, they don't want to go through the trouble of actually trying to make their approach toward the substantial spiritual domain through modest natural growth. They want to try and bring that divine substance down here. They'll get some sort of experience, but it won't be the real thing. So we hear in places in Bhagavad Gita, raso ham apsukonteya prabhasmi shashi shuryayo pranava sarva vedeshu shabdake purusham nishu. As an example, Krishna saying, raso ham apsukonteya, I'm the taste of water. Prabhasmi shashi shuryayo, the light of the sun and moon. Actually, whatever you can see is Krishna. There's a way through proper thought, You want to call it meditation? You can call it that, where you can trace everything back to the central conception of the Absolute. It's only in local context and the confines and constriction of time and space that it's assumed any other identity or appears to be not related to Krishna. As Madhvacharya said, with regard to words, like horses, the local context is like putting reins on a horse. You can make it go this way or that way. He said, but if you release the horse from the reins, it will run according to its own necessity. He said, so all the words we use, they have the reins, they've been reined in by local context. If you release them and they run according to their own necessity, they'll run to Krishna conception. So when the Braja Gopis have been separated from Krishna for so long, and Krishna is in Mathura at the time, and he sends Uddhava as his representative to give a message to them. In one place, he's advising that they engage in meditation or understand that the Lord is in the heart, so he's always with them. Or all these elements, you can trace them back to the Mahapurusha. They've sprung out some, so everything should be able to remind them of him. They become angry. And Vishwanath Chakrabarti Thakur says, they're showing that prem is superior to gyan. They don't want to hear all these things. Not the Lord is in your heart, or all the elements, or essentially Krishna in that way. But Krishna also says to them that his message, because each message that is, deflected by the gopis, then Uddhava said, no, I have more messages. Hold on. He says that, one thing Krishna is saying is that when someone's right in front of you, they're not so present in your mind, because they're right in front. All of your attention is to who is before you. But in their absence, they're very much present in your mind. He said, so I want to, and that's really being present with someone. He's saying, so although we may be physically separated, my form is here, your form is there, but due to that separation or that absence, I'm very much present in your mind and hearts as you are in mind. And in that way, we're really together in a substantial way, because just being physically near one another is not the most intimate type of association. So the mind, the senses, the mind, the intelligence, according to Guru Maharaj, all shadow representations of the spiritual aspect of the same. So in Bhagavad Gita, we hear Krishna say, Bhumir apo anulo vayu kam manu buddhir evacha ahankara ityame bina prakriti rashtadha. Earth, water, fire, air, ether, mind, intelligence, and ego. He said, these are my inferior energy. And then he said, and that's so, mind, intelligence, inferior. And jiva bhuta, apareyam itastvanyam prakritim vidime param. Jiva is a para prakriti, superior energy to all of those things. So that means the mundane mind, the mundane intelligence, these mundane elements, they're covering jiva. But Jiva in her pristine glory has mind, intelligence, senses, everything. And that we connect with that. What are we told? Hrishikena Hrishikesha Sevanam Bhakti Ruchate. By engaging the senses in the service of Krishna, that will awaken their natural serving tendency, so that the mundane aspect gradually vanishes and diminishes and vanishes altogether, and the spiritual golden self comes out. Hare Krishna.